Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
From KQED.
Oh, yeah, that's why we got that early booking. It's
ski trip.
Tire noises coming from the Mariposa garage. Hey, just remember to open the gate.
This is Political Breakdown from KQED in San Francisco. I'm Scott Schaefer. Today on The Breakdown, it's our Friday take on news topping the world of politics, including the race for mayor of San Francisco gets a new heavyweight contender, although he's only about 5'7", so I don't know if he's really a heavyweight, but Board of Supervisors President Aaron Peskin throws his hat into the ring, instantly making him the most prominent progressive challenging mayor, London Breed. Also, talk about a photo finish in the race to replace retiring Congresswoman Anna Eshoo in Silicon Valley. Assemblyman Evan Lowe and County Supervisor Joe Simidian, both Democrats, tied for second place. With all the ballots now counted, it means both of them will move on to November, along with former San Jose Mayor Sam Liccardo, who finished first. And here to discuss that and more are two members of the KQED politics team. You know them. You know them well. Correspondent Marisa Lagos, reporter Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez, or as we call him, Joe Fitz. Hey, Joe.
Yo.
All right, well, let's talk about that mayor's race. Joe, you did talk to Aaron Peskin this week, and I'm just wondering, first of all, what does he say is the case for him being the next best mayor for San Francisco?
Yeah, we sat down in his North Beach office, and, you know, with all humbleness, he talked about maturity, a need for the mayor to take responsibility for the crises we're seeing on the street, fentanyl, crime, homelessness, and this is how he put it to me.
Our highest elected leaders and most of the candidates in this race have been busy blaming, you name it, the Board of Supervisors, judges, nonprofits, the progressives, rather than taking responsibility. The buck stops with the mayor. This is a strong mayor system of government. And let's stop pointing the finger. Let's stop dividing. Let's bring people together.
And you can really hear here, he's already kind of trying to jab at the mayor's argument that, hey, the Board of Supervisors are the ones who are stopping us from getting all these solutions. And he's really redirecting it.
He says most of the candidates are blaming everyone else, but he's really talking about London Breed. This is personal for him in some ways between the two of them, right, Marisa?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's so fascinating. I think, you know, the perception outside City Hall of these two people versus for folks like us who have been following them for really decades. And like, I mean, you know, Peskin is certainly going to run from the left, and he is definitely going to sort of inhabit a lot of those progressive positions. But I think my bet would be he's also going to run kind of as an operator, right? Because he has been in City Hall for a very long time, longer than London Breed. And he has, whether you like his record or not, cut a lot of deals and got a lot of stuff done. He knows how the city works. I'm just like, can he really make that argument while also not getting blamed for the way the city is?
Oh, yeah, totally that, which is so fascinating because even the arguments against him that he's Machiavellian and is like the orchestrating things behind the scenes actually lend credence to that argument that he knows every page of the city charter. Like, he's got it memorized.
Yeah, well, I think there's little question that of all the candidates, he does know city government best because, to your point, Marisa, he's been there a long time. But I'm wondering, you know, he's had this reputation, Joe, as being toxic, you know, as a personality, as a person, somebody who would call department heads and staff members late at night, often drinking. He would show up, as he did once, at a fire in North Beach and started telling the firefighters what to do. He now says he's been sober for 3 years. Does that matter?
Yeah, you know, undoubtedly, attacks are going to come for him over that. There are going to be people who come forward who say, oh, yeah, I've been on the receiving end of those calls. But he is leading with that, which I find so fascinating. He, you know, the opening of his speech, what he's going to say at his rally tomorrow, is talking about San Francisco is a city in recovery, and I know a lot about recovery.
That sounds like Matt Dorsey.
which you know, I think is something that shows how politics have changed over the last few decades. I think that you see a lot of politicians leading with some of their, you know, perceived weaknesses as strengths. You mentioned Matt Dorsey, supervisor, open about the fact that he relapsed into his drug addiction while he was a spokesman for the police department. You have someone like our former mayor, now Governor Gavin Newsom, who publicly, you know, went through this divorce and public drinking and then said, I'm going to get sober. Not clear exactly where he went with that. But like, you know, I do think that this is something that has really changed. And it is fascinating that, you know, Aaron would sort of lead with this. But I also think on the other hand, like, I mean, the thing that is going to, I think, define this mayor's race for him is going to be a debate over housing and housing policy.
Exactly. And of course, you know, the mayor this week kind of came toward him a little bit after she'd been very critical of him, saying that he opposed more density and taller buildings. And she said, sort of this week, issued a directive kind of in line with what he was saying in terms of, you know, like some of the developments. I mean, I think for him, the criticism is literally in his backyard, his district, you know, he wants to keep things more or less the way they are.
Sure. But, you know, what I find fascinating about Breed's decision is that, you know, it is a bit of a political calculation. The idea that we don't think we can actually get things built that are like 14 stories. So let's not stir the pot. Let's not poke the bear by saying that we can't, that we'll zone it for that. Let's zone it lower so that people are less hot. And that is kind of what Peskin did in a way. He's about to run. He's making sure his base is happy.
Well, we should explain. I mean, this is because of a proposal in, you know, to essentially change zoning requirements. And so in very, you know, for San Francisco, for suburban feeling neighborhoods, you could have more like high rise like buildings. I mean, what's interesting about this is like, what are the coalitions that all the candidates are going to try to build? Because you have Peskin, who is obviously running from the left, but also has, you know, represented Chinatown for a long time, has deep ties with a lot of the AAPI community, including people on the West Side who are very against these types of like high density buildings. Mark Farrell, short-time supervisor, former mayor, who's also running in this race, is trying to sort of get that same coalition together. And so I think it's going to be really interesting.
Totally. And let's just, for, you know, way of history, let's just remind folks. So after Ed Lee died, London Breed, president of the Board of Supes, became acting mayor. She was then interim mayor. And then Peskin orchestrated a coup to get rid of her and replace her with Mark Farrell, who was the interim mayor until the election, in which London Breed ultimately won. So there is a history there of these three.
It sounds like tomorrow they'll all, at least two of them will be
tell us, Joe, what's happening tomorrow at Portsmouth Square.
Yeah, so Peskin has his kind of big announcement rally at Portsmouth Square. A lot of his supporters from the Chinese community, the progressive community, are set to be there. But we also know that there is going to be counter rallies, at least one from Gary Tan, the kind of centimillionaire behind Grow SF, and also mayoral hopeful Mark Farrell. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see the size of these rallies, what they say, will they clash? I was talking to Peskin. He's like, they better respect my Chinatown aunties and uncles. They better be
playing
kind.
That card. Yeah. Well, it is true, though, that he does have, he knocked off, I think, Ed Lee's appointee, Julie Christensen, to that seat. So he is well known in North Beach and Chinatown. And there isn't, he's obviously not Asian American, but, you know, he is going to make a play for those votes for sure. Farrell is really going hard right. You know, he's going to fire the police chief. He wants the National Guard to come in and help crack down on fentanyl. Is he, Marisa, do you think he's kind of staked out like a little bit too far to the right ultimately to win?
I mean, we'll have to see, but I do think that this is what makes it messy. We haven't mentioned, you know, Daniel Lurie, philanthropist, also in the race, kind of running a little bit to London's right on some things as well. Additionally, Supervisor Asha Safai, who both, I think, is trying to kind of ride that, like, you know, both sides of that. He's very pro-labor, but also, you know, I think in other ways has been, you know, connected with the business community and other folks. So I think all of them are going to be struggling in the coming months to find a lane.
Yeah, and it's interesting. And like, as we said, you know, London Breed kind of pivoted a little bit toward Peskin on some things. And then Lurie has pivoted toward Breed on some things over crime and, you know, public safety and that. And of course, all of this is going to be kind of in this stew of ranked choice voting come November.
Where, not to mention the bigger politics of this election, right?
Yeah, there's a lot going on. And then there's some supervisorial district elections also where we see this moderate progressive dynamic at play. So, Joe, I know you're going to be watching all that, including tomorrow's kickoff in Portsmouth Square. Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez, thanks so much for joining us.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday Sunday.
Thanks.
Yes.
38.
All right. All right. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, a wild finish in the South Bay for a congressional seat. You're listening to Political Breakdown from KQED. I'm Scott Schaefer. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
And welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer here with Marisa Lagos. And joining us now is our KQED Politics team colleague, Guy Marzorati. Hey, Guy.
Hey there.
Happy Friday. So you have had the luck or fate, fortune of following this congressional race to replace Anna Eshoo down in the South Bay. And it's gone back and forth, you know, on election night and in the quick days afterwards. Simidian had actually, Joe Simidian, the supervisor, had declared that he would be in the runoff against Sam Liccardo, the former mayor. And lo and behold, it's
turned
a
out
dead
to be right.
Heat. Yeah, he is right. That's right. Kind of. So tell us, you know, how this all came to be.
Yeah, I mean, this is the race to replace Anna Eshoo, who is, you know, not running for another term after more than 30 years in Congress. And, you know, it was a wild primary to begin with. You had 11 candidates. You had millions of dollars spent. And then this insane result where Lowe and Simidian were basically deadlocked for second for weeks and weeks. The tally kind of swung back and forth until finally, earlier this week, the vote count finished in Santa Clara County and San Mateo County, and it was tied. So you have now, for the second time in our top two primary era, the first time ever with three Democrats, where you're going to have three candidates in the general election.
And, you know, you and I have been talking over the course of these weeks, like, is somebody going to do a recount, call for a recount? And I guess really there's no incentive when you're tied because you got to pay for it. And you might end up losing.
Yeah. So there's the mutually assured destruction component of it, which is like, yeah, it's very hard to game out when you're tied. OK, where are the votes going to come from? Where do I target, a recount or why do I go through with this? So that's from the Lowe and Simidian campaign perspective. Then there is just the cost. I mean, this is going to cost to do a full manual recount, probably north of $300,000 in Santa Clara County, north of $100,000 in San Mateo. So it's a huge chunk of change. I think at this point it would, you know, you could throw out a scenario where some interest group that really didn't like Sam Liccardo, whether that be unions or PG&E, you know, saying we have a better shot of taking him down in a one-on-one race. But still, I mean, that's just a lot of money to put forward for a really uncertain result.
Well, right. And I mean, you would think from Liccardo's perspective, like, I don't know, he did do sort of head and shoulders better, you know, relatively speaking. This is going to be a higher turnout election. So maybe he likes his odds in a three-way race. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you, I was on the phone all day yesterday with the campaigns, their supporters. They all have a theory. They all can, you know, squint and tell you why. No, actually,
this is good
this
for
three-person
me.
Dynamic is incredibly good for me. I mean, Liccardo starts out from a point where, yes, he won. He finished first in the primary. I think, you know, you can make an argument the voters, the small percentage, but still a share of voters who are conservative or Republican in this district would probably prefer him to the other two candidates. Lowe, you know, he courted progressives in the primary. There are going to be a lot more voters in November, potentially a lot more younger progressive voters. And then Simidian may be more of a geographic case. Lowe and Liccardo are from both kind of the San Jose, Campbell area where, you know, Simidian, his voter base is to the northern part of the district, Palo Alto, Mountain View. There was a lot of candidates from Palo Alto, including two sitting council members in the primary. Maybe Simidian can grow his vote share by having that area to himself.
And just to be clear, they don't need to get 50% plus one.
No, this is a plurality. Whoever finishes first among those three is the next Congress member.
I'm curious, Guy, like, how do you see this playing out in terms of, like, outside groups and spending? Because we have Sam Liccardo, who really went head-to-head with unions when he was there. Evan Lowe, who's been seen as very closely tied to law enforcement, like, not as progressive in some ways on some of those criminal justice issues as, you know, I think the younger progressive base that he would like to bring out. And then obviously Joseph Midian, who just has a really long record in that county, but not, I think, hasn't had as sort of tough as races as you saw like Liccardo have in the mayoral contest.
Yeah, I mean, I think for these outside groups, it's really going to be a matter of, you know, priorities, right? So Lowe, he got the backing of big labor groups, California Labor Federation, South Bay Labor Council. But is this the race where labor feels like they can get the most bang for their buck? I really question that. You have a really competitive supervisor race here in downtown San Jose that I think labor is going to be really focused on. You have elections up and down the state in purple districts where the difference in Congress is between a Democrat and a Republican.
What's the difference between these three guys in Congress, really?
I mean, you know, Liccardo's a little maybe more pro-business, but, you know, to your point, Marisa, once you get back to very DC, close to tech also.
Yeah, well, but my question is, like, also then, so then does this become more of a personality kind of contest? And does Sumidian's age come into that, right? Because you have two candidates in Lowe and Liccardo that are far younger at a time when people like Anna Eshoo were stepping aside, arguably for the next generation, although I think she endorsed Sumidian.
She does endorse Sumidian, who she's known forever. But I wonder also, there's a lot of Asian AAPI voters in this district. Guy, I don't know what the exact numbers are, but you got to think that accrues to Evan Lowe's benefit a bit.
I don't know, though, because, you know, it's a really diverse group of Asian voters in the district. Think about, like, Vietnamese voters who are, you know, a huge block in San Jose. They, you know, that community has been divided among different candidates, but in some cases has skewed more conservatives, especially older Vietnamese voters. And they certainly recognize Sam Liccardo's name on the ballot as being a two-term mayor. I think that's a bigger deal than necessarily a specific ethnic appeal. But for Lowe, he is younger. You know, he's build himself as progressive. He would be, you know, breaking a glass ceiling as being the first openly gay Congress member in our delegation here in the Bay Area. So I think that's another thing that could potentially draw voters to his cause. And I think the biggest differentiator for him is Lowe's really focused on national issues, much more so than the other two candidates. He's built himself as someone who's, you know, going to stand up to Trump in Congress, going to, you know, be a champion for expanding reproductive rights. So to me, maybe in a November election, maybe voters are more attuned to that kind of message than they are someone who's like, I'm going to fix, you know, housing and roads.
Yeah, well, there will be a bigger turnout, as you said a moment ago. So that'll be new voters who didn't participate in the primary. But what about these, like, you know, the fourth place finisher here was a Republican. Then you had Peter Dixon, the former Marine, and Rishi Kumar, who had run before, two Democrats. Like, where, especially Republicans, which, you know, are about, you know, what, 15% or so of the electorate?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, just how many Republicans vote in this election. Like, Republicans who turn out in November, do they just leave this blank? I think you could make an argument if you're Liccardo, like, in the context of a San Jose mayor race, the business-friendly candidate, which, you know, has been Liccardo in the past, has drawn Republican votes. So you might have Republicans in San Jose saying, you know, I've broken the seal already. I've already voted for Liccardo in some kind of race. Maybe they're more inclined to do so here. Or maybe it's something where Republicans just, there's an undervote. They're leaving this blank.
And Marisa, you know, we've talked before, not just about this race, but the Senate as well, where, you know, a woman, Anna Eshoo, is going to be replaced by a man. There's three men in the top three. And I know, Guy, you were very impressed in the primary with Julie Lithcott-Hames, who got about, what, maybe 6% of the vote, something along those lines. Does gender play into this at all, or?
Well, no.
Abortion is an issue, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe if there had been a woman in the race, it could have more. But these are all pro-choice Democrats with very liberal, in that sort of broader national sense when you talk about politics. They all have pretty liberal voting records. And so I just don't, I think, you know, this is, again, it gets to the age issue. It gets to the sort of changing of the guard when voters are faced with, you know, three dudes. I don't think gender may not be an issue.
Well, it kind of reminds me of what we said before the March primary about the Senate race, that if it had been, say, Schiff and Katie Porter, that would have been a much closer race and perhaps drawn more people to the polls. But in this case, yeah, I'm not sure. If you got three, you know, fairly centrist Democrats, little ones maybe a little to the right, maybe, you know, a little to the left. I'm not sure it really drives turnout. But, you know, there will be, Guy, as you said, a natural boost in turnout just because it's a November presidential election. And we'll see to whose advantage that accrues. All right. Well, you got a good one to watch there, Guy.
Yes, sir.
All right. Have a good weekend. Guy Marzorati, KQED Politics correspondent Marisa Lagos. Always good to be with you guys and have a wonderful weekend. Before we go, I just want to let you know about an upcoming event that we're part of. PBS NewsHour and KQED are presenting the Reframe Festival. It's an all-day festival with conversations between big thinkers and then people like Marisa and me, who are like maybe not, you know, journalists. Maybe we're big thinkers some of the time, but we're all going to be on stage on Saturday, April 20th. You can get tickets if you'd like at kqed.org/reframe. All right, that's a wrap for Friday, April 5th. Political Breakdown is a production of KQED. Our engineer is Catherine Monahan. Our producer is Izzy Bloom. Our team includes, of course, Marisa Guy, Molly Solomon, Otisar Taylor Jr., and Ethan Tovin Lindsay. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thank you so much for listening.